Thank you for coming to the second session of three of this seminar on the traditionalist approach to Krishna consciousness. Should devotees be conservative or liberal? It's well known, it's quoted in Srila Prabhupada Lamrita, that Srila Prabhupada said that devotees are not conservative. He said this in response when he was told that Allen Ginsberg had told some of Srila Prabhupada's followers that he considered Srila Prabhupada to be very conservative. Here's a quote from Prabhupada on this. If a guru says, yes, whatever you are doing, you are right. You can do whatever you like. You can eat whatever you like. People will say, oh, he's a very nice guru. And as soon as he will say, no illicit sex life, no meat eating, no gambling, no intoxication, oh Swamiji, you are very conservative. I have heard these things. That poet, Allen Ginsberg, he said, Swamiji, you are very conservative. No, I am the most liberal. You do not know. If I become conservative, then none of you will come to me. This is a quote from a lecture of Prabhupada, from a conversation. Allen Ginsberg told me, Swamiji, you are very conservative. I said that I am the most lenient. I'm not conservative. You are conservative. You cannot give up your bad habits. That means he's conserving his bad habits. He's conservative. He won't, just stays in the same position. I am very liberal and accepting everyone. Because you are conservative, you cannot give up your bad habits. Therefore, you deny to come to my camp. I am very liberal. Atreya Rishi, Prabhu, said, a Vaishnava is conservative with Krishna and liberal with everyone else. Prabhupada, that is not conservative. Conservative means unnecessarily catching something. That is conservative. If you try to protect your life, will anyone say you are very conservative? I want to kill you and you want to keep your life. Is that conservatism, do you think? Atreya Rishi, no. Prabhupada, and if the murderer thinks that you are very conservative, I want to kill you and you did not allow, that is not conservative, that is self-preservation, that is not conservative. Conservative means unnecessarily you catch some rules and regulation without any meaning or without any utility. In Sanskrit it is called niyamagraha. So what people call conservative, some people would call conservative in Krishna consciousness, they would blame others for being conservative, but it's that which is required to preserve our Krishna consciousness. If we say that you can, well, just do whatever you like and chant Hare Krishna. So if you just, chanting Hare Krishna is the yoga dharma, so just chant Hare Krishna. And whatever else you do, it doesn't matter. In fact, some people might think that people who really want to show their faith in the holy name do all kinds of sinful activities just to show that Hari Nama is all there is. Hare Nama Eva Kevalam. So the Prakriti Sahajya Sampradaya will say, well, you can do anything because the holy name will deliver you. But this is without recourse to the science of Krishna consciousness, to the understanding that there are offenses. That's why at the time of initiation, the 10 offenses should be explained, and why devotees should be trained in the science of Krishna consciousness. So to be conservative in the sense of wanting to do that which is required to advance our Krishna consciousness, that is not at all a fault, that is required. So Srila Prabhupada said that we are sometimes Srila Prabhupada said that we are conservative. In this society, Srila Prabhupada said, we propose that you give up illicit sex, meat eating, intoxication and gambling. It's interesting that Srila Prabhupada so often emphasized this, because he saw that many of his disciples, first of all, he saw that the whole society was addicted to these things, which is a great obstacle. How can you become spiritually advanced if you're engaging in sinful activities? You see, this morning in the class we're reading about the ecstasy of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, And here we're discussing about giving up illicit sex, meat eating, gambling, and intoxication. Srila Prabhupada spoke about this more than the ecstasy of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, because it's what's the level that people are at. And even many of Prabhupada's disciples, even after taking initiation vows, which means to come a long way, doesn't it? To take initiation vows, to take the vow that I will follow all this throughout my life, and one has to be tested for some time. It's not that we give initiation immediately. So people, they come to that stage, they're experiencing the happiness of Krishna consciousness, at least in the initial stage, but then many again go back into this. So Srila Prabhupada emphasized that. So when people hear this, giving up these sinful activities, they go away saying, "Oh, Swamiji is very conservative, but I cannot become liberal," and tell everybody, "Go ahead and do all nonsense and you can become God conscious. I cannot possibly recommend that. Therefore, my first condition is that if someone wants to become my student, he has to follow these four regulative principles. Consequently, I do not have many followers, but I have a select few. Because they are select, they will bring about a revolution in the world. One moon is sufficient to dissipate darkness. If there is one moon, there is no need for millions of stars. It is useless to expect a large number of followers. We want only one good follower. If I can get one man to become Krishna conscious, I will consider my mission fulfilled." This is from a lecture. No, it's from an interview with the New York Times. Srila Prabhupada spoke to the New York Times. Recently, one of our God brothers who's, Tripurai Maharaj, let's not beat around the bush, he put on his website or his blog or whatever it is, he put a statement that Prabhupada made it very strict, insisting on four regulated principles, but most of his disciples weren't able to follow that. And therefore, he proposed that Prabhupada's establishing the four regulated principles was actually an obstruction in their advancement in Krishna consciousness. Whereas it's the only way one can become Krishna conscious, unless one follows these principles. But Prabhupada says here, well, one person, if they follow, that's enough. They can make a revolution in the world. And we see that among Prabhupada's householder disciples, three couples went to London, and they went through many difficulties to spread Krishna consciousness. And they were able to do that. If they had other interests of sense gratification, they wouldn't have been able to do that. Spiritual strength comes from following principles. So maybe you can get many followers if you don't have many principles. I was sent an email before I come here that when I come I could give some suggestions on how to stop or to combat the canvassing of the youth here by various Gauriya Math elements. I would just educate, just like they said, this is a learning center. They have the idea in schools to educate the children in why drugs are not good for you. So give them some education. So I would tell them that if you want spiritual life, if you're really serious, then take to it seriously. In the Gauriya Math, they'll just on-the-spot initiation, whether you're following or not. There are many stories. I mean, we all know them probably, of people who initiated this. They gave up smoking 10 minutes before they were initiated. Or there are stories of some outsider comes to do a plumbing job or something, and no idea of Krishna consciousness, and there happens to be initiation, so he gets initiated also. Things like that. So, four rounds if you can manage it, and something or other, take initiation. On the spot initiation with no standards. We should tell the children that they don't go in for this. They're just cheating you. They don't have your best interest at heart, because you can't be spiritually advanced unless you follow principles. And it's just a bluff that you, even if that super guru is going to deliver you by his mercy. But his mercy is that he tells you to follow that which is beneficial for you. You may have super duper 1,000,008 gopi bhav guru of the whole universe and a few other universes also. But if you don't follow, you're not going to make any spiritual advancement. That's, guru is a teacher, teaches you what to follow. You have to do your bit also. So this education, if that education is there, that if you really want spiritual life, then you should take it very seriously. And then they won't be cheated by these people who just offer them the highest thing. Often they'll come in and tell you, Gopi Leela and all this, and then you can get initiated even if you're still smoking. It's just sahajya. High talk and low standards. Whereas Srila Prabhupada, he was a very practical preacher. He spoke what we needed to hear and kept a standard for initiation. So these terms, sometimes Prabhupada said that we are conservative because we need to be conservative. There had to be some basic value, some basic standards. But on the other hand, he's very liberal because he's giving Krishna consciousness to people who, when Srila Prabhupada went to the West, he brought back disciples to India. And at that time, when for many years, actually, Prabhupada's godbrothers, most of them, they said, well, these lectures, they can't be devotees. They're not qualified. So Srila Prabhupada is very liberal in some ways, but not liberal to the extent of telling people, well, you can do whatever you like, eat whatever you like, and think whatever you like, have whatever philosophy you like, and everything's all okay. There's a siddhanta, a philosophy to be understood. There are standards to be followed, without which it's not Krishna consciousness. What is that? Nake tilak galai mala shonge ek pare bala. Bhaktivinoda Thakur sings. He's talking about that they have tilak and neck beads, and on their lap someone else's wife. This is not Krishna consciousness. So yes, we should be conservative in our own habits. We should strictly follow the process of Krishna consciousness and strictly adhere to the proper understanding of Krishna consciousness as given by Srila Prabhupada and all the acharyas. In preaching, there has to be some measure of liberality. We can't expect people to immediately follow everything. Preaching means to extend ourselves to others, to make community. Unless there's some communication, there's no preaching. It's not just a matter of speaking some rote formulas. Preacher has to be able to win the trust of people and gradually bring them Krishna consciousness. It means to go, to some extent, to go down to their level and communicate in terms that they can understand and impress upon them about Krishna consciousness. But that doesn't mean that we may speak to them. We may not say everything to them immediately. They may say, well, I like to eat meat. And we say, okay, all right, but still chant Hare Krishna. Please try chanting Hare Krishna. That doesn't mean that we think it's okay. But we don't try to slam people with everything immediately. So, I was previously speaking about liberalism and fundamentalism. Now, these two broad cultural groups, it's very prominent in America, but neither of these approaches work. They don't give happiness in this life, nor or pure behavior in this life. Nasa siddhin, what is that? Nasu kamna param gatim. Because they're not according to the Shastric standard. Neither of these approaches, either liberalism, secular liberalism, nor religious fundamentalism, neither of them are exactly to the point, which is to understand Krishna. So, liberalism, or the humanistic outlook, or secular outlook, historically it arose in protest to the failings of the, arose in the Western world in response to the failing of the of Christian dogma, with step by step what the Christian dogma was undermined by Copernicus and Galileo, saying that actually the sun is the center of the universe and not the earth. Of course, actually the Vedic version is different, but according to the scientific version, estimated to happen through their telescopes, it was seen that what the church believed was wrong, and in so many respects. And when the so-called Arabic numerals, which were actually from India via Arabia, were introduced, the church was against that. That you have to use Roman numerals, and so, which are quite unwieldy for performing mathematical functions. You just can't perform mathematical functions in the same way as you can with the convenient Arabic numerals. But the church was against that. They were against any kind of innovation. They were orthodox and traditional, just presuming themselves to be right because God's on our side. We know what's right. But that was undermined by, again and again, by scientific research, and the Catholic Church completely capitulated to Darwinism. Whereas the fundamental, mostly Protestant churches, they say, no, God created the world in 6 days, and there's Noah's Ark, and the world was created 6,000 years ago. It says they calculate from the Bible. And so you have on one hand this fundamental Christianity, which people who consider themselves to be scientifically educated, they think it's just bizarre, and how they think it's a crime against humanity to promote such things. That you just believe in the Bible, even if all the evidence goes, all the scientific evidence goes against it. But on the other hand, the liberalism that arose out of non-belief in Scripture, that's also produced a society with no fixed values, a hedonistic society. It arose on the hope that by providing education and material facility and equal rights to all, then everyone would be happy. Why do people fight with each other? Because they're barbaric, they're not educated. We should educate everyone and give material facility. If everyone has plenty of all the necessities plus more, then they should be happy, and then give equal rights, and then it'll be heaven on earth. But it's not. The Western world has, to a large extent, especially in, some countries which are socialistic, actually, like in Scandinavia especially, there are no poor people. They tax heavy taxes, but then there are no really rich people and no really poor people. And plenty of people have enough of everything that they need materially, and plenty of facility for sense gratification. They're also the most culturally liberal in sexual terms. Even when I was in Denmark in 1980, we spoke with one teacher. She became a devotee. And she said at that time it was quite common for the teachers to have sex with the children, and no one thought there was anything wrong with it in the schools. I mean, not in the schools, maybe, but the school children, so. And, but those are also the countries with the highest suicide rates in the world. It may be because of the long, dark winters, but one thing's for sure, people are not satisfied. Otherwise, why would they be killing themselves? So the idea that everyone be happy by being nice to everyone and fair to everyone and providing sense gratification, it didn't work. We see in America also, the world's most developed country, that drugs, family breakdown, all these things. And maybe that's one reason why people do turn to Christian fundamentalism. Or Islam is the fastest growing religion in the world. Not in Afghanistan or Bangladesh, because they already have plenty of Muslims there, but in the West. Maybe it's like a counter-cultural reaction from young people who are fed up of seeing the kind of society they have. In our generation, talking about my age group, counter-culture, they join our movement, but now they're joining Islam, as a protest against the hedonistic, directionless society in which they've been raised. So, this is a book I've compiled called Glimpses of Traditional Indian Life. Thank you for reminding me about that. In which it gives a picture of traditional Indian life, but traditional societies all over the world, they fostered certain values such as cooperation rather than competition. In the modern Western world, especially in America, there's the idea of the rugged individual. It's supposed to be part of the American, or at the heart of the American psyche, the rugged individual. You stand on your own two feet and get ahead. But it leaves it leaves people without close relationships. So, in traditional societies, people tend to identify themselves more as a member of a group than as an individual. They're defined by their family, their caste, their village, where they come from. Just like I'm saying Bangladesh because I spent a lot of time there, and it is a very traditional society even now. Although it did change a lot after electricity came in all the villages and TV. Noticeable change. In fact, some years ago when electrification was going on all over India, we'd be traveling in different parts and we'd find that in the places, such a difference in the places where they got electricity and when they didn't because of the TV. Makes a lot of difference. And it could make a good difference, but somehow or other it's Kali. Maharaj Kali has taken over the TV. One devotee who's into astrology told me that the TV is ruled by Ketu, which means Ketu is the other side of Rahu, inauspicious. So, yeah, cooperation rather than competition. In Bangladesh, yeah. In Dhaka, in the capital, there are people from all over the country. They come to work. If a person meets someone else from the same district, could they introduce, where are you from? They say, I'm from that district. Oh, from the same district. Immediately they're brothers. And they'll immediately establish a relationship as brothers because they're from the same area. So that very strong feeling that we're... And people make decisions generally not by themselves. If they have to make a major decision in their life, such as leaving the family home and going to Dhaka to work, they won't make the decision by themselves. They'll have to consult the elders of the family, and it will be considered in not just how is it for the benefit of the individual, but how will it affect the whole family and the whole village, and all this is considered. In traditional society, family values, respect for all life, that even in among here in North America, that the what came to be called the Red Indians, they were mostly meat-eating, but they wouldn't kill any, they wouldn't kill unnecessarily. They had respect for life. Whereas when the Europeans came, just for a sport, they killed all the bison, all the passenger pigeons. They used to take passenger pigeons in railroad trucks from the country to the cities for eating. There are none left, all killed. Whereas the Red Indians, they preserved life. They didn't kill unnecessarily. Respect for learning. If a person was learned, that was considered, that was respectable. Inherent belief in God. It was just, there were no atheists. In traditional societies, there are no atheists. It's only when this atheistic education or non-traditional learning was introduced that anyone could even imagine not to believe in God. So all traditional, in general, traditional cultures, they do foster values which are metaphysical values, that life here in this world is not simply meant for our personal enjoyment, but there's an afterlife. We have to live considering that our actions in this life will affect us in future, and therefore we should behave in a manner conducive to that. Srila Prabhupada presented the Vedic tradition as the most enlightened of all. It's not simply enough to follow any tradition. Recently in India, I met some devotees who from the West, who had become interested in traditionalism, which was a teaching espoused by someone whose name I can't remember in the 1920s. At that time, he saw that it's better to follow traditional culture. And he was quite influential, and his teachings are still influencing people up to the present day. And his conclusion was that the best society, the best tradition to follow is the Indian Hindu tradition, but he said it's not possible for Westerners because of the caste system. And if he'd have gone and or somehow come in contact with Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he would have been fortunate. But he didn't, and he ended up becoming a Sufi, vegetarian Sufi. But some of his followers at the present day, they followed that to the conclusion and have become devotees of Krishna, so seeing it as the best system. So Vedic society is controlled and authoritarian, not liberal to the extent that you can do whatever you want, however you want, at any time, at any place you want, as long as it doesn't grossly harm others. And that was there until recently in society. People didn't let their kids out at night, especially not their daughters, that they could go out at any time, and not without telling their parents. Even I used to see in India that the girls that would go to school, which wasn't, that was previously considered something wrong, but then they would go to school and come back, they would be accompanied. Not that they would go alone. It was considered wrong to let them go alone. So it was authoritarian, which people are very afraid of, because they say that power corrupts and absolute power corrupts absolutely. Which is not actually necessarily true. If the seed of corruption is in the heart, then the seed will come out if one has the opportunity to indulge it. But we see in history that Parikshit Maharaj, Yudhishthir Maharaj, they had absolute power, but they were not corrupt, because they were trained to execute their function in a manner for the benefit of others. Dharma. this in Varnashram Dharma, the concept of dharma means to act not for one's own personal sake, or not simply for one's own personal sake, but to consider on the, not even just in the group, but in on the whole cosmic level, what is for the benefit of everyone. Dharma teaches us to act in a selfless manner. That's why it is important for devotees to know what is dharma and to follow that. Of course, it's said that Krishna consciousness, it transcends dharma. But what often happens is that devotees don't follow dharma, but they don't transcend it either. It's not that Krishna consciousness, if one is actually Krishna conscious, then one is beyond dharma. But if one, as long as one is not fully Krishna conscious, then he should follow the principles of dharma which regulate our lives in a manner that keeps us from, at least from grossly falling down. So this idea again that, well, we can just do whatever we like and it's okay, we'll chant Hare Krishna, this is a complete misunderstanding. So, the Vedic society is controlled, authoritarian, yet benevolent. One of the very few things I remember learning at school was a statement by a teacher. It struck me as so strange, but after coming to Srila Prabhupada's shelter and hearing his teachings, I understand is right. He was a student of politics, the teacher studied and was teaching politics, sociology, all these things. And he said that the best system of governance is benevolent dictatorship. He got that, he understood that. But he said, but it is not possible. That bit he got wrong. At least Srila Prabhupada thought it was possible to establish that, benevolent dictatorship. Srila Prabhupada wrote in Bhagavad Gita purport, in order to keep the balance of social tranquility for progress in spiritual life, there are traditional family usages meant for every civilized man. So my understanding is that Srila Prabhupada wanted to introduce the Vedic Varnashram system to quite some extent. In one place he wrote that it's not possible to introduce it fully as it was in the past, but he does write about Varnashram a lot. And my understanding is that he didn't, and he writes about Indian cultural usages, and my understanding is that Srila Prabhupada, he didn't write this as just some kind of quaint cultural descriptions, or that he wrote it in his books because he had to write something and fill out the page with something, but his books are meant for instruction, and that he wanted that at least gradually devotees should move towards those usages because they are given by Krishna and his representatives for the benefit of human society. The guidelines in Shastra are meant so that we can live in a manner that is conducive for self-realization. Srila Prabhupada writes in Bhagavatam purport, eating, sleeping, defending, and mating are the four principles of material bodily demands which are common to both the animals and human society. To distinguish human society from the animals, there is the performance of religious activity in terms of the social statuses and orders of life. They are all clearly mentioned in the Vedic literatures and were manifested by Brahma when the four Vedas were generated from his four mouths. Thus, the duties of humankind in terms of the statuses and social orders were established to be observed by the civilized man. Those who traditionally follow these principles are called Aryans, or progressive human beings. So Srila Prabhupada equates civilized society with following of the traditional Vedic principles. Whereas in modern understanding, civilized means to have a motor car and air conditioning and all these kind of things. It's considered civilized if one has more material facilities. But in Vedic culture, the most civilized and the most advanced person is considered the person who is content to live without these, to live as simply as possible for the sake of spiritual advancement. That is considered civilized. It's a completely different outlook. So in our society also, ISKCON, if we think that, well, the best devotees are those with the biggest projects and lots of money, and that's a misunderstanding. Of course, we're not against projects and money. All these things should be used in Krishna's service, but it's not necessarily the measure of one's worth. So, another purport, I'm quoting Srila Prabhupada, the so-called Brahmana, Kshatriyas and Vaishyas have forgotten their traditional activities, and in the absence of these activities, they are called Shudras. It is said in the scriptures, Kalo Shudra Sambhavaha. In the age of Kali, everyone will be like Shudras. The traditional social customs are not followed in this age, although formerly they were followed strictly. So Srila Prabhupada here writes that those who don't follow the traditional family usages or don't follow the traditional culture, they're just like Shudras. So we see the traditional culture in India, which is largely lost, was to rise early. Everyone would rise early, bathe, perform religious activities, whether puja or some people they perform sacrifice in their home every day, three times a day, some people. Or meditation, or japa, or chanting some mantras. Everyone would perform such activities. And then again at midday, in the heat, people would listen to recitation of Puranas, and in the evening, again, go to the temple or at home perform some religious activities. So in this way, people, they were busy, they weren't lazy, but they didn't spend all their time, or the bulk of their time didn't go for economic activities. Economic activities were minimal, whatever was required. But spiritual activities were maximized for everyone. So this culture, Srila Prabhupada wanted to reintroduce. However, we shouldn't be blind followers of tradition, simply following it because, why do we do it? Well, don't know, but we just do it. When Krishna questioned Nanda Maharaj, why are you doing this ceremony in worship of Indra? Nanda Maharaj just said, well, we did it. We do it because our forefathers did it, which is, as I said yesterday, that's considered a good enough answer. But Krishna didn't accept that. That it's not good enough to be a blind follower of tradition. One should know what one is doing and why one is doing it, which is one of the reasons why Indian culture has broken down, is that the rituals are there, but why they should be performed, people don't know. People still go to temples, especially temple going it's not decreased. If you go to Tirupati, they have a whole system of they give you a wristband and a computer. It has a barcode, yeah, and they give you a time that you can come. This way they regulate, because there are so many thousands of people coming every day to the temple. So it's all very organized. And you get your timing, okay, you come back after 12 hours, and at this time, in this half hour, you can get darshan. So it's not that temple going has stopped, but in the temples, there's no system to educate people about why they should come to the temple, who is the deity, what is the purpose of worshipping him. In many Indian temples, you'll see that there's at the entrance a facility for sitting. What do you call that? A stool or something like that. So, and people before leaving, they'll come in, take darshan, sit down for 2 seconds and get up and go. Because there's a rule that when you come into the temple, you should sit down. So as I understand it, the idea is you should sit down and join in kirtan or listen to what's being spoken. That's the meaning of it, but it's just a ritual that you come in, take darshan, pray for, give us this day our daily chapatis or whatever it is, and then you leave. But oh, you have to sit down before you leave, otherwise you won't get your chapatis. So we shouldn't be blind followers of tradition. Education should be there. And I often say that in India, that the difference between this temple, this ISKCON temple and other temples, is that this temple, there's not just darshan, coming and seeing, but there is education. Come here and learn. So our centers, they should be centers of spiritual culture with brahmanas for teaching others. Here's another quote from Srila Prabhupada. Many realized souls such as Raghunath Das Goswami and King Kulashekhar have recommended with great emphasis that one develop this spontaneous love of Godhead even at the risk of transgressing all the traditional codes of morality and religiosity. So such statements are sometimes misunderstood, that one should develop pure love of God, even if that means that one transgresses tradition. But it doesn't mean that if we're not on the level of pure love of God, that our love of God is exhibited by our not following any morality. By being immoral, that will be love of God. It's not like that. The idea is that we should aspire to follow in the footsteps of great devotees like Raghunath Das, who left home. He had a young wife for the sake of running after Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Of course, Raghunath Das, he would take a few drops of buttermilk every day or two and one or two pieces of chickpeas and not sleep. So if you have a young wife and you want to follow Raghunath Das, well, if you can come to that standard, very good. Otherwise, it's better to remain in sthane stita shutigatam tanuvang manovi. Better to, instead of imitating Raghunath Das, to follow in his footsteps and discharge one's family responsibility. Actually, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu told Raghunath Das that, first of all, not to be a markata vairagi, not to be a monkey renunciant, that you make a show of renunciation because one feels family life to be very troublesome, which it is. But that is not in and of itself a reason to give up family life. So, Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur was much criticized for this because he gave the sacred thread to people of all castes. So he was criticized by the caste brahmanas for doing so, and he was also criticized by the Vaishnavas, that because Vaishnavas, in Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's line, when they take initiation, especially into Babaji life, then they have to throw away their Brahmin thread, because it's understood that they're beyond all material consideration. So he was criticized from both sides. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, in Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's conversation with Ramananda Rai, in which the progressive spirituality was discussed, Ramananda Rai's first proposition, when Chaitanya Mahaprabhu asked Ramananda Rai, "Please speak to me. What is the goal of life and how to attain it?" Then Ramananda Rai, quoting from Shastra, said, "Varnasham acharavata purushena parapuman vishnor aradhyate panta nanyat tatto shakaranam." That following Varnashram and worshipping Vishnu, this is the path, this from Vishnu Puran, there's no other way to satisfy the Lord. And there are similar statements in Bhagavad Gita that, tamabhyacha Siddhing Vindati. What is that? Swakarmana tamabhyacha Siddhing Vindati Manavaha. By performing one's duty in Varnashram and by worshipping the Lord, everyone can attain Siddhi. They can attain full success. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said, Eho Bhajya, this is external. So he rejected Varnashram. On one level, he rejected Varnashram. But this is not to be misunderstood. It's not that he, in every respect, rejected Varnashram. How could he do that? Because how can he reject the teachings of Bhagavad Gita and of the Shastras? But he said it's external. That means it's not Varnashram is, following Varnashram is not the highest understanding. But that Chaitanya Mahaprabhu rejected it as external to the soul doesn't mean that he totally rejected it. He himself, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, accepted sannyas, which is a position in the Varnashram system. And he followed it very strictly. He was concerned with following it very strictly. So it's not that Varnashram is totally rejected, but rather the Varnashram is given by Krishna, Chaturvanyam Maya Srishtam, Guna Karma Vibhagashaha. It's given by Krishna for helping people who are conditioned to come to the perfect state. So Srila Prabhupada, he wanted to introduce Varnashram, seeing the problems of the broader civilization and within our own ISKCON society also, for both devotees and for non-devotees. Srila Prabhupada wanted to introduce Varnashram. Even before he went to the West, Srila Prabhupada outlined in Back to Godhead magazine the structure of Varnashram society to be established at a Gita Nagari, which later he established a farm by that name in America. When Srila Prabhupada first came to the West, he didn't speak so much about that Varnashram, and it seemed that Srila Prabhupada was very hopeful that his disciples could very quickly come to the platform of pure devotional service. And he even went as far as to marry his disciples in a manner that he called some in Boston. He called some devotees and said, "Was that Vaikunthanath? You marry Sharadev, and someone else you marry someone. Someone else you marry somebody. When tomorrow? Okay." He did that with the Srila Prabhupada's hope was that, well, they're all devotees, so Srila Prabhupada didn't go through the normal, very careful system in traditional Indian society of arranged marriage. It's not arranged marriage, it wasn't like a lottery that, okay, put this one with that one, but very carefully, it was by caste, because each caste has their own culture, subculture within the broader Vedic culture, and generally a different mindset goes with the different castes. You will find people of Vaishya caste, they're money oriented. We'll see that, yeah, that's why they have at birth that the different items will be given to put in front of the child. A book, a weapon, money, to see what they will be attracted to. When the Pandavas came after marrying or winning Draupadi, after Arjuna won Draupadi in the Swayamvar, it appeared that they were Brahmanas, or they presented themselves as Brahmanas, because the Pandavas were supposed to be killed already at that time. But there was some doubt because they seemed to be just like Kshatriyas. So when they came into the court of Drupada, Drupada Maharaj arranged in one area books and spoons for sacrifice and all the kinds of things that might be interesting to Brahmanas. And on another table, was laid out different weapons, and the Pandavas immediately went to the weapons and said, saying, "Oh, yeah, it looks pretty good sword." And then, you know, so they must be Kshatriyas. They, otherwise, why are they coming here? So, yeah, marriage was arranged very carefully. Astrological consideration was there, discussion between the families over various expectations. It was very carefully considered. Then only was marriage arranged. But Srila Prabhupada arranged like that overnight without consulting any astrologer, with the expectation that by Krishna consciousness, that devotees, they will be married and everything will work out because they have a higher goal of life. Unfortunately, that didn't happen. And later, Srila Prabhupada, he didn't want to arrange marriages, but he said that Varnashram should be instituted because devotees, they're not coming up to the high level very quickly, and therefore Varnashram community should be there for devotees. Satsrup Maharaj, wasn't it? In one conversation, Prabhupada was talking about this, and it was going against everything that Prabhupada had said previously, that devotees are transcendental. And Satsrup Maharaj was bringing the same arguments that Prabhupada had taught him, to say, well, Prabhupada, aren't devotees transcendental? Prabhupada said, if they're transcendental, why are they falling down? So, it's required also to help devotees. It's like it's not transcendental in itself, but it's a system which helps to keep us, to place us in an occupation that is suitable for our psychophysical propensities, so that we feel materially satisfied also. And we can offer our work to Krishna, as stated in Bhagavad Gita. Swakarmana tamabhyacha, that we perform our own work, that which is suitable for us, and we offer that to Krishna. Now, our devotees should be ready to do the needful, do whatever is required for Krishna. But we see that generally, devotees, after some time, they gravitate toward the kind of service which they feel satisfied to do. Just like, for instance, Pushkar Prabhu is an artist. He could do so many other things, but he's an artist. He feels satisfied to do that. And as we all know, he does it profusely and very well. And no doubt, Srila Prabhupada and Krishna are very satisfied with that. He could have also been a cook or anything else, but that he's particularly gravitated toward that. I could have also done many things, but I'm concentrated on writing. I feel some satisfaction in that. So it's a very natural thing. Arjuna also, Krishna could have said, okay, go and be a yogi. But Krishna said, you can't. That's by your nature, you have to fight. But mama nasmara yudhyacha, think of me and fight. So it's a very practical system. And Srila Prabhupada saw for the benefit of the world also, because the people, they're living directionless lives, just interested in sense gratification. And we should engage people in a manner that is pleasing or conducive to their psychophysical propensity. In modern society, most people spend most of their life doing things that they don't want to do. What a horrible society. That's why they say, oh, Monday morning, oh. Why should it be like that? That most people do it. And they have whole, these New Age gurus who try to teach others how to inspire people to do things that they do, how to motivate people, how to motivate people to do things which they basically don't want to do. There shouldn't be any need for that. the idea, well, you pay them more money. That's why they make the whole society money-oriented. Just get more money, more. They're just trying to get people to, we'll give you more money to do that which you don't want to do. So it's a bizarre and horrible society. Whereas in traditional societies, we see that this Varnashram, or not any traditional society, most people, they're quite happy doing what they're doing. A carpenter, previously, when they whatever it is, they look at these chairs, functional chairs. They're just made to sit on. But previously, a carpenter would make a chair, and he'd put some carvings on it, very beautiful. There's no need for the carvings, but it just looks nice. How about that? Aestheticism, lost, now just whatever's functional, that's all. And after some time, throw it away, that's all. So you'll see, like on the rickshaws, again, Bangladesh, every one of them, not necessary, but every one of them has some painting on it, hand-painted. They're usually pretty gross, and they're often funny themes also, like someone holding a gun, something like this. But the idea, there should be some painting on it. It's not just some functional machine, but should be nice also. Should look nice. Some painting should be there. So Srila Prabhupada saw the social problems of both broader society and of ISKCON, and proposed Krishna's solution, Varnashram Dharma, as a solution to both. Varnashram, which means agrarian-based society, going back to the land, and not just living on the land, but living off the land. There's a difference between just living in the country and living by growing our own food, all the necessities of life given by Mother Nature, everything we need, rope, housing, housing materials, clothing. In almost all parts of the world, we can get everything locally. Some things maybe, just like for cooking, we need some metal utensils. So that may not be available everywhere. So, but that will generally last for many years. So it's not something that you need every day. But in various parts of the world, there are various materials which can be grown for clothing, cotton, flax, hemp. Hemp is marijuana, but it's traditionally used for making rope and clothing. Wool, the wool of sheep and llamas, and leather is also, it's not, leather is actually not banned for Vaishnavas, but it's supposed to be from leather shoes can be made, but from the carcass of a cow that's died naturally. So all these things are provided by nature. And Srila Prabhupada proposed that we, as we all know, what I'm saying is nothing new to all of you. Maybe it is, because people who join our movement nowadays, they often don't know about these things. It's not preached very much within our society. But Srila Prabhupada had the vision that if we establish such communities, that people will see, Srila Prabhupada's idea was to establish an ideal society, that people will see that people are living comfortably and in a healthy manner, and they have high ideals, and they're happy. Recently I was at a festival, or a camp, a few days camp, where devotees come all over the country from in Croatia. It's quite a remote spot. So somehow or other, some German tourists found their way into that camp. They were driving past and they stopped to ask directions, and devotees called them in, and there was a German-speaking devotee there. And they were looking, it was all these people dressed in funny clothes, but anyway, they came in. And the devotee, Manita Prabhu, our godbrother, he explained to us afterwards how this couple, they were just like in a state of shock. And they were saying to each other, these people, we never saw any people like this. You know, they're so happy. They'd never experienced happy people like this. And they're serving each other, because it was prasadam time, and they're serving each other, coming around. And these guests came in, they just came to ask the way, and then someone brought them a chair to sit on, brought them a plate of food, and they were just completely amazed. They couldn't imagine that people could be so happy and would just, for no reason or other, for no reason except that they happened to be there, to treat them so nicely. And Manidhar Prabhu said that they were amazed, and he was talking to all the devotees present there, you wouldn't be able to understand why they're amazed. You wouldn't be able to notice, because for us it's just normal and natural. And we see that, devotees, when we, just like we're some days living in a devotional community like this, and then we go outside and we see that there's such a difference. The non-devotees, or karmis as we used to call them before it became non-PC in ISKCON, they all look so miserable. Whereas devotees, they're very happy. We smile a lot. So Srila Prabhupada wanted to set up communities where everyone could take advantage of that. But for various reasons, which I don't want to get into discussing now, most of our householder devotees, which means most of our devotees, have felt constrained or have been constrained to join the karmi workforce or to do some karmi business. And due to lack, Srila Prabhupada saw that we need our own economic base where devotees can live with each other. And that by living with each other, that we also reinforce each other's cultural values. Whereas if we have to go to some office or factory or whatever to work with non-devotees, then necessarily we'll have to associate with them. And that means we'll imbibe their values, because association, as Hiranyakashipu said, it's quoted in the Nectar of Devotion, association acts like who remembers? Anyway, association, it influences us so much. Sangat sanjayate kamaha. According to our association, our desires develop. So by associating with non-devotees, we imbibe their values, and thus, for instance, we have Republicans and Democrats among devotees, although it's really got nothing to do with us whatsoever. So in my humble or not humble opinion, all of ISKCON's problems, including its worst problems, such as guru problems and child abuse problems, they could have been largely reduced. I don't think fully reduced, but if we'd have, due to lack of understanding and implementation of the Vedic culture, which Srila Prabhupada explained to us in so many ways, which to a large extent is Indian culture, the traditional Indian culture. For instance, a small, what may seem like a minor point, if we dress as it, what we call devotional dress, it influences our consciousness and it influences the consciousness of people around us. But if we dress in the style of non-devotees, then we naturally tend to even subtly associate with the values of non-devotees. So all these points, a culture is made up of every aspect of our behavior, and the behavior influences our activities and our values, and our activities and values, they influence our behavior. Unfortunately, we sometimes see or hear within our movement some denigration of Indian culture. Now, we're not Indian patriots, we're not American patriots, we're not patriots of any particular country, but according to Shastra, India is the place in this universe which is best for people, or where people who are pious in previous lives are born, because there the culture has been nourished by various avatars of the Supreme Lord and by great devotees. The culture has been nourished, which is suitable for God realization. So Srila Prabhupada himself, although he was undoubtedly very flexible and he didn't insist on following Indian culture, but he stuck to it and inculcated that in his disciples to a large extent. When Srila Prabhupada first came to the West, one Swami Nikhilananda of the Ramakrishna Mission said to Srila Prabhupada, before he had any movement, Srila Prabhupada went to see him. Srila Prabhupada, in his first months in America, was studying the culture to a large extent, because he understood it is a different culture and people aren't going to immediately accept everything that Srila Prabhupada has to offer. But Srila Prabhupada, while studying the American culture and introducing Krishna consciousness in a manner that people in American culture could accept it, largely retained the cultural values of traditional Vaishnavism. The Swami Nikhilananda told him you have to eat with a knife and fork, and you have to dress in pants and coat, suit, pant, all these things. And even the Ramakrishna Mission sannyasi said to Prabhupada, you have to eat meat and take wine because it's cold here. But Srila Prabhupada, although he did wear a long coat of Western culture, which also Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, even there's a photo of him, but he retained his traditional sannyasi dress. He never gave that up. And food style, he could have introduced Western vegetarian food, but he introduced Indian style vegetarian food, which was, as we all know, a great hit, great success. So Srila Prabhupada wanted to introduce this. I feel it's been much misunderstood, just like there was a paper presented to the GBC in the year at its 2000 meetings, addressing the problems of women within our movement. So, although there were undoubtedly valid concerns in there, some points made, I feel, were pretty stupid. One of them said that, well, in the early days of ISKCON, all the men and women all used to dance together. And when circumambulating Tulasi, then the men and women would all go together. And then later, these nasty sannyasis, they introduced all these things, that men and women separately in the temple. But my understanding is that, well, Prabhupada brought devotees to India, not just for preaching in India, but for them to learn the culture. And that it's not just in Indian culture, but in any religious culture, the men and women are separated. Not only in the religious place, but even in the home, or even in the village, the segregation is there. So, fortunately, we haven't gone to the extent of men and women dancing together in the temples, all next to each other. But there's some misunderstandings there. I'm not advocating that women have to stand at the back, but segregation should be there. So, there were many values which were standard in Srila Prabhupada's presence, which nowadays are considered unnecessary. just like rising early in the morning, dressing in what we call devotional clothes. There was no question when Srila Prabhupada was present of devotees coming, initiated devotees coming in. It was in the temple, everyone would wear what we would call devotional clothes. Prabhupada allowed that for going outside for book distribution, that we could wear what we might call conventional Western clothes. And he didn't insist that his household of disciples who are working in some company, that they have to wear devotional clothes at their company. Srila Prabhupada was quite pragmatic. But in the temple, before Krishna, there should be devotional clothes. So such standards are nowadays considered by many as unnecessary or irrelevant or even wrong. Our movement was a revolutionary movement. There was the idea that Srila Prabhupada himself spoke of cultural revolution. Unfortunately, we have become content to become a religion. That if people think of us as a bona fide religion, we think that's the total success of our movement. Instead of becoming an alternative to Kami society, we have, to a large extent, adjusted ourselves to it. Maybe because devotees, like I say, they were obliged by economic factors to go back to the Kami society. Other factors, it was perceived that in our enthusiasm to preach, maybe sometimes we were too pushy. Our book distribution techniques, although the book distribution was good, but the techniques, especially the change-up, it created a widespread dislike and distrust of our movement. And so maybe we are now more mature, but maybe we threw out the baby with the bathwater. The spirit of preaching has gone down. We are increasingly in the Western world, those devotees who are going out on book distribution, we find more and more. Of course, I don't live here in the West, but I interact with devotees who are doing book distribution. I often ask them, do you go in devotee clothes? And some of them do. And they find that there is... Well, one devotee told me that it's good because from the beginning, people know who you are. And if they stop, then there's a good chance they'll take a book. And if they go away, well, you didn't waste your time with them, so to speak. So one devotee I recently spoke with, he travels all over America distributing books. He says it's very good going among the young people. They mostly appreciate that very much. You're doing book distribution also? You're nodding your head in affirmation. Yeah.
Yeah. Yes, with your recently initiated
disciple. Yes. Vishnu, who I'm speaking to about that. What's your name, Prabhu?
Bhakta Bharat.
Okay. In England, some of our devotees they started doing book distribution devotee clothes, and they found the response was so good they thought, why did we ever stop? Maybe the policy was to be in like a needle, but we didn't come out like a plow. We came out like a needle also. So anyway, I don't want to be too denigrating or sarcastic, because all attempts at preaching should be lauded. But in like a needle, yeah, we should come out like a plow. We should come out strongly. Not accommodating everything. Preaching means that we, like I say, we may stand and talk to people, or we give books to people where they have a hamburger in one hand and a cigarette in the other, their arm around their girlfriend, and doing all things which are completely against the Vedic principles, but we try to give them a book. And we may talk to them in a way which is completely non-devotional. Oh, is this your girlfriend? Oh, very nice, and all this. But For preaching, we should do that, but ourselves, we shouldn't be so liberal that we, within our own society, that we accommodate practically everything. We have, to a large extent, we've made compromises with the Western mindset. Devotees going to the Kami universities, I'm not per se against that. I'm not saying it's wrong to do so. But it appears that in some cases that devotees have become influenced by the academic way of thinking, and their whole perspective on Krishna consciousness has become watered down because of that, or maybe even offensive. And we see that even some of the most highly respected members of our movement, their attitudes have changed. Their understanding of Krishna consciousness and that which they preach within the society now seems to be more influenced by that of the mundane academic outlook than that of the acharyas. So we find that devotees, they doubt Srila Prabhupada in practically everything, although previously it was the very strength of this movement, as Srila Prabhupada himself emphasized so much, yasya deve para bhakti yata deve tata guru tasyaite katita hyartha prakashante mahanaha. Because devotees had great faith in Srila Prabhupada, and with that faith they were able to make great advancement in Krishna consciousness. But now it seems that practically everything that Prabhupada says and Shastra says is up for question. It's just the question may be there. Arjuna questioned Krishna. When Krishna said, I'm now speaking this knowledge to you, idam vivasvate yogam pruktavanaham avyayam, I spoke this knowledge to Vivasvan, and Arjuna interrupted Krishna and said, excuse me, wait a minute, how is that possible? Arjuna didn't say to Krishna, well, what rubbish are you talking? That can't be right. You're just the same age as me. And Vivasvan is millions of years old. How could you have spoken to Vivasvan, who later spoke the knowledge to Ikshvaku, when Ikshvaku was born millions of years ago? So how is it? But Arjuna, he didn't speak in a challenging way. He said, katame tad vijani yantvam ado proktavaniti. How can I understand that you spoke this knowledge previously to Vivasvan? He didn't say that what you're speaking can't be true, therefore we have to reject it. But he asked, how can I understand? So if it's not that questioning is disallowed, rather relevant questions are encouraged. But it should be with the attitude of how can I understand this, rather than how can I reject this. There should be not blind faith is not good. If we don't understand, we should ask. But blind rejection is also not good. That, well, that can't be true. The Krishna, how could it be spoken to Vivasvan? Oh, Prabhupada said that they didn't go to the moon. That can't be true, because we all know they went to the moon. So how is it possible? Prabhupada himself explained why it's not possible. Because you cannot go to other planets by mechanical means. That you have to have the required qualification. One has to have the pious activities to go to the moon. Prabhupada gave various arguments. He said, they say the moon is all dust, but the moon is the nourisher of the vegetables. So how can there be no vegetables on the moon? Prabhupada gave very good arguments. Nowadays, the scientists who previously said that the moon is all dust, they now say, well, actually there's ice on the moon. So they say whatever they like. They change their opinion all the time. And that was another of Prabhupada's points, that what we say, we have faith that it's correct because it's the same knowledge that is given generation after generation. It doesn't change. It's not that Vedic knowledge is subject to change. So we should try to understand how it's true instead of questioning that it's and saying that it's not true. It's the same thing, this relativism. The academia is, agnostic. The whole approach is agnostic in the sense that they don't, not just agnostic in the sense of, well, maybe there's a God, maybe there isn't, but whatever statements they make, all of their subjects are subject to revision, ratification, or total rejection. The idea is that there's no actual knowledge, but there's only what we understand at the present time, and then when we discover some more things, that may be changed, or there may be some different outlooks and different opinions, and it's always subject to change. But that's not knowledge. That can't help us. So the academia is agnostic in its whole outlook, and it's very dangerous to associate with such people. They even those ones who are so-called favorable to Krishna consciousness, their favorableness is it's a condescending, patrimonious kind of, yes, 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 very nice, pat them on the head. Even if they write about Krishna or Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Prabhupada will write, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is Radha and Krishna combined, come to this world for the deliverance of the fallen soul. And the scholars will write, according to the Gauriya Vaishnavas, Vishvamba Mishra, later known as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, is the incarnation of the Hindu god Krishna. It's a completely different way of writing it. It's not incorrect, but the whole approach is just according to some scholars, within the Gauriya tradition, some say this and some say that. They're just studying, like just like some people study beetles and some people study butterflies, and they study our acharyas and the Shastra and Krishna. But their approach is, their whole approach is offensive because they take Krishna as the object of their study. We will discover about Krishna and tell you about Krishna according to our objective methodology. And we have to say, this is okay, all right, this is all right, this is good, all right, we can accept that. Taking themselves as the standard, they want to study Krishna and Vaishnavism. So this whole attitude comes again from this idea that the Western way of life, the Western civilization, the Western method of Western means modern empiric, come rational methods of acquiring knowledge. This is the summit of human civilization. So we may think, this idea of free thinking. We may think that we are thinking for ourselves, but we are trained to think that we think the way we think because we want to. So we think that what we think is our own thought, but actually it's not. This whole idea that everyone should have their own opinion, and we should respect everyone's opinion. This is this free thinking or liberal attitude. Why should we respect everyone's opinion? Why should we respect the opinion of Richard Dawkins, for instance, whose whole goal of life, he's on a campaign to convince everyone that there's no God. Why should we respect the opinion of anyone who doesn't follow the Vedic process of acquiring knowledge, just like Gadagraja was telling me? That his daughter, one of his daughters, is much enamored by Stephen Hawking. Who is this Stephen Hawking? Who is any one of us? We're just like ants. In the whole universe, we're just like little ants crawling around. How much can we know? Why should we take their opinion seriously? So, yeah, and again, the whole society is a big mess. So why should we take these people's opinion? They've made the society such a mess. So why should we try to... We're trying to solve the problems. We voted in a new president and he's going to solve all the problems. But it's the same, they're applying the same mindset. So among the karmis and among devotees too also, we can quote the saying, to err is human, but to keep on making the same mistakes is insanity. Right? If there's something wrong and you just keep on trying to, again and again doing the same, applying the same methodology, it doesn't work. So nowadays we see so many devotees are influenced by mundane psychology, which is mundane, and it's based on the mundane psychology as evolved largely from this madman Freud. I mean, he was a madman, he was a nutcase. Really, what's this? What's that book? Foils, is it? If I go like this or like this, someone will take a photo. Okay, I'll make a few poses, and you can take as many photos as you like, and then I'll sit like this. Foils Bookshop, close to ours. It's supposed to be the biggest bookshop in the world. It's very close to our temple in central London. So I went there looking for some book or other sometime. They had a whole big display. Every week or every month they have some special feature. So this month it was on Freud. And there was a big placard saying that even though everything Freud has said has been discounted by modern psychologists, he's still one of the most influential, he's still the most influential voice in modern psychology. Even though they know that what he's saying is rubbish, still... It's so influential. Freud, for instance, his famous Oedipus complex, which he dreamed up, God knows out of what, out of some perverse ideas that he had himself. The idea that, his idea is that every young man is envious of his father because the young man is sexually attracted to his mother. Yeah, strange, isn't it? That's one of Freud's famous theories. And the whole idea... he criticized the idea of God, that God... Previously there were hunter societies in which there was one dominant male, the strongest, who dominated all the women, and then all the younger men, they were all envious of him and afraid of him. And this... respect for and at the same time envy of the strong leader male, this became transmogrified into belief in a god who you have to follow him, otherwise he beats you up. So this was Freud's idea of religion, which or theism, which became Marx's declaration of the opiate of the people. So mundane psychology, it's really a mess, and they have completely. Mostly the treatment is to fill people up with pills. They don't actually treat the conditions or heal people, but they have they give you a bunch of pills. So, yeah, we have our psychology also. Well, the first thing is this society makes people crazy because the whole society in which people, there isn't, there's lack of social support. Everyone's on their own. Even in marriage, people don't feel secure. People feel unsafe in their own home, that their own children can kill them or their parents can abuse them. So it's not surprising if people are psychologically imbalanced. Devotees are much influenced by this mundane psychology, by mundane management theories, various new age ideas, maybe Reiki, astrology, Vastu. I mean, not to totally discount them, I mean, some of these things could be incorporated, but if we start to see the world through the eyes of these various theories instead of Srila Prabhupada's instructions, then as devotees we're seriously imbalanced. They may have their application, but not as our paramount direction. Sorry if I sound very negative and skeptical, but I am addressing various issues within our society. And the conclusion is that we should come back to what Srila Prabhupada gave us, instead of getting our ideas from the newspaper, the TV, the internet. Nowadays it's very easy to be a theologian. Anyone with a computer and an internet connection becomes an internet theologian. Study of Srila Prabhupada's books will give us a clear understanding of reality and our place in it. And not from reading newspapers, not from watching TV programs, even if they're documentaries. Another trend within our society is that we hear a lot of talk about prem. We hear this word a lot. Not so much the word surrender. Now, when in Srila Prabhupada's presence, we heard a lot about surrender, right? Srila Prabhupada spoke a lot about surrender to Krishna, sarvadhaman parityaja mamekam sharanam vraja. And although he definitely pointed us to love of Krishna, he didn't talk of it in a very cheap way. But surrender, then automatically love comes from that. So if we talk a lot about praying but not about surrendering to Krishna, then we're like the Prakriti Sahajiyas, who take it as something very cheap. Prem is there. That is the natural birthright of everyone. But we have to surrender to Krishna. Then the surrender is the basis of love of Krishna. So my conviction is that if we do what we are supposed to be doing, our society, if we do what we're supposed to be doing, we could alter the world, as Srila Prabhupada had the vision of that. We have made some very serious mistakes in our application of Krishna consciousness and of the teachings of Srila Prabhupada. But it doesn't mean that the teachings themselves are faulty. But rather we should, with its full faith, we should apply them in a Krishna conscious and mature manner. And actually we find that the world is far more ready for Krishna consciousness now than it was when we were, I'm talking about to our generation here, my generation, that in those days, when nowadays people are looking for alternatives. One devotee said to me a few years ago, he said that, well, we're going to this rainbow festival for preaching. Is that what it's called, rainbow festival? And he said it's very good for preaching, and every year we bring back a few new bhaktas. So I said to him, well, if we did what Prabhupada had instructed, if we made our own communities, we wouldn't have to go to the rainbow festival. They'd all come to us. That's what they're looking. They're going out in the country with no electricity, far away from modern civilization. So, and some of them are convinced enough by our spiritual message that they want to come and join us. But if we could show that alternative living, simple living, with high spiritual principles, I'm convinced. I mean, anyone, it should be obvious in the modern age that people who can see that the modern society is hollow, it's got nothing to offer us. Really, it's got nothing to offer us at any level. I mean, the food they give us is poison. The air we breathe is poison. The water we drink, we have to pay for water that isn't grossly poisonous. But in plastic bottles, that's also poisonous. So the education is poison. the TV is poison, and then on top of that, they buy some cigarettes. If you don't have enough poison, then you buy some cigarettes, buy some alcohol. You have to spend money to poison yourself some more. And then when you get sick, they give you some more poison. So people can see that the whole society is exploitive, imbalanced. It's really, the society has nothing to offer us. Nothing to offer us that's really for our benefit. All they can offer is get some sense gratification. And if that doesn't, if you're not satisfied, get some more, and get some more, and get some more. Then you go crazy and we'll give you some pills. It's really got nothing to offer us. There's no direction, there's no stability, there's no security. No one cares for us. So if we could actually implement Krishna consciousness, then there's tremendous scope for, as Srila Prabhupada said, changing the whole world, bringing in a revolution of Krishna consciousness. But again, there's a tension between spreading widely and maintaining our principles. For spreading widely, we need to be somewhat lenient. But for being Krishna conscious, for practicing ourselves, we have to be strict. We can't expect people coming in immediately to be very strict in following, even if they have the idea to do so. It may be very difficult for them to do so. So Devamrit Maharaj has had some success with what he calls halfway houses, in which people who want to be devotees, they can gradually adjust them to that way of life, because he sees that people of the present generation, they are physically and mentally damaged from a young age, because from a very young age, at puberty, which hits very young nowadays, or even prior to puberty, they're engaging in sexual acts, and at a very young age, they're abusing their bodies with various substances which are harmful to mental health. And it's also very likely that in their childhood they've been physically or sexually abused in the home, so it's very difficult for them to trust anyone. So for preaching we have to be lenient, but when people come to join our ashram, the ashram should maintain the ideal. And we should, as Srila Prabhupada said, we should be ideal. The members of the Krishna Consciousness Movement, they should show an ideal standard. Srila Prabhupada said, we must maintain an ideal institution, not necessarily for everyone. It's not that, you see this, there's this saying, Srila Prabhupada built a house in which the whole world can live. That was, some astrologer said that. But it's not that that automatically everyone in the world is Krishna conscious. It's a house in which anyone can come, but there, to be admitted into the house, there are certain conditions you have to follow. It's not that we just bring anyone in and you just do whatever you like. It's not that because Prabhupada made a house in which the whole world can live, therefore we have to bend everything and adjust everything and overlook everything, just bring everyone in somehow or other. Rather, Srila Prabhupada said, we must maintain an ideal institution, not necessarily for everyone, but there must be such an ideal institution that the most intelligent men can avail themselves. This is from TKG's diary. TKG, Tamal Krishna Goswami, commented on this, that these remarks would be well heeded by many of our God brothers who in their zealousness to have everyone accept Krishna consciousness end up compromising, thus endangering the ideal society. We see that those religions that compromise or try to make it available for everyone, they're actually on the decline. Just like those churches who They allow gay bishops, and the idea is that, well, we should accommodate ourselves to the society. But it's such the idea that, well, if we don't make it very open, then not many people will join. Actually, it doesn't work like that, because people, and then in the preaching, what are you going to preach? There's nothing to preach. People come to a religion with the idea that we're going to get some guidance how to make our life better. But if in the church, there's no real difference between what's inside the church and outside the church, then why come inside the church? What's the reason to go there? Just some vague belief in God. But those religions which give a definite path, you should do this, you should do that, you should follow this, follow that, those are the religions which are booming. Islam, Mormons, most people are followers. And this idea that everyone is free thinking and they have all their free rights, and that's there, but people are confused, and many people they're looking for some spiritual direction, which if we can provide it, then people will be prepared to follow if we actually show that this is a better way of life. So Srila Prabhupada said there should be an ideal institution. So Prabhupada emphasized quality over quantity. That let there be, even Srila Prabhupada gave the example of that university, I don't know if it's true now, but he said that universities, they maintain a philosophy department. Even if very few people come, they still maintain a philosophy department, because even though not many may come, that's required. Someone should study that. So ideal means quality over quantity, as in the famous example Srila Prabhupada gave of boiling the milk. This quote from Srila Prabhupada: "Now I want that we shall concentrate on making our devotees Krishna conscious and ourselves becoming Krishna conscious, and not be so much concerned with expanding ourselves widely, but without any spiritual content. Just like boiling the milk, it becomes thicker and sweeter. Now do like that, boil the milk." Of course, Srila Prabhupada, having written this letter in 1972, he never stopped widespread preaching activities. Although he said we should boil the milk, he didn't stop preaching widely. But he always repeatedly, we'll find in Srila Prabhupada's letters, repeatedly emphasized that devotees should follow the principles of Krishna consciousness. As for instance, I'm just quoting one letter. There are dozens of letters like this. "Try your best," this is a letter from Srila Prabhupada in 1975, "try your best to develop an ideal society there, to set a perfect example for the human society of how one can live very simply, chanting Hare Krishna and developing love for Krishna." This is to a devotee who's developing a farm community. "Make sure that you keep the whole program pure by carefully following all of the rules and regulations that I have given, rising early, attending Mangal Aarti and holding classes, chanting 16 rounds daily, observing the four basic principles, no intoxication, meat, eating, etc. Then everything will be a great success." This was Srila Prabhupada's formula for a great success. He didn't emphasize so much on this management principle or that management system, but he emphasized that if we follow all these principles, then everything will be a success. Another letter, quote from a letter from Srila Prabhupada: "Krishna's plan becomes very easy for us when we follow Krishna's orders. Otherwise, we are following Maya's plan and become frustrated at every step. Following Krishna's orders means chanting daily 16 rounds, following the four rules and regulations, rising early, associating with devotees, like that. Unless these principles are followed, we cannot expect Krishna's protection." So, this example of boiling the milk, that even if we are small, it's better than being diluted. Srila Prabhupada always emphasized these principles, and he always preached widely also. in the Srila Prabhupada Lilamrita, it's related that before Srila Prabhupada had developed the Mayapur project, he brought some of his early disciples to Navadvip to meet some of the ashrams of his godbrothers. So one he went to was the Devananda Gauriya Math, in which there were many sannyasis and brahmacharis present, but most of the brahmacharis, they were actually they were attending school, and they were from villages, and they were living in the ashram as a kind of for accommodation purposes. And the sannyasis and brahmacharis, many of them, they had hair with styling, and they didn't look so paka. So there are many of them, but the standard wasn't so good. And then, I can't remember which one, then they went to Bhakti Rakshak Sridhar Maharaj's ashram, where there were very few devotees, but the standard was very high. So it's recalled there that when they came back to Prabhupada's land in Mayapur, he didn't have the project developed, but he had a heart that, I believe it was Achyutananda, who's led Guru Puja, Kirtan today, here. He asked Prabhupada that, well, in one of the ashrams there are many devotees, but they don't seem to be so serious. Whereas in the other, it's a very good question, in the other there are not many devotees, but the standard is good. So which should we follow? Prabhupada said both. Quantity and quality. So that's the challenge for us. So it's maybe natural or understandable that when high principles are propagated in the world, that people who are attracted to the ideal that it or the goal that it offers, people will be attracted to that, but not everyone will be so serious about following the rules. And we find that after any great religious leader comes, that various followers, they do the half a chicken philosophy on him. It just seems to be normal. That after Jesus came, Jesus will save you. But what did Jesus teach? Well, never mind about all that. And we'll and so they say, we just believe in Jesus. What does it mean to believe in Jesus? They don't say. Don't think about that. Just believe. I believe in Jesus. What does it mean? Well, Prabhupada said, you should follow his teachings. You have to, what is that? Bathe in the blood of Jesus. Whoa. Nasty idea. But people say this, they don't even think what it means. But Srila Prabhupada emphasized that if you're a Christian, why don't you follow the teachings of Jesus? So even after Chaitanya Mahaprabhu came, immediately after he left, there were so many different groups who were just taking his teachings and distorting them. So it's quite likely, if it's not already going on, that after Srila Prabhupada brought Krishna consciousness to the West, that the various people will adjust things a little bit here. He liked the back half of the hen, because it gave an egg every day. We didn't like the front half, so we throw out the front half because we don't have to feed it. So we like Prabhupada's teachings, we like the prasadam, and the dancing, and the singing, and the praying, and the gopi lila, but we don't like all these rules so much. But it doesn't work. So it's quite likely, as in Bengal, that Krishna consciousness may spread. It's quite possible that it may spread widely, but in a diluted or even perverted form of people who just like to be devoted. They like to chant Hare Krishna, but they don't like to follow the rules. But the actual movement of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu will be preserved by those who follow everything very seriously. And though those who are desirous to attain the actual goal of life, they will follow everything very seriously and take the whole package and not just the things that they like. So, having said that, I'm finished for today. It's 12:30, and tomorrow I'll continue. And there should be time for questions, answers, and protests. And some of the nastiest things are yet to come. And some of the things Srila Prabhupada said are very difficult for many devotees to accept. But I'm going to speak about them tomorrow. So I'm leaving you in that note of suspense.